Big Red Revival.
Hours from right now, the Huskers will be traveling to Minneapolis, where they take on the Minnesota Golden Gophers as the 2023 football season gets underway. Zach, it's finally here. It's game week. There's no more talking. There's no more, list season. None of that fun stuff. It's actual game week. We had a pretty decent week zero slate. So it's here, 48 hours away. Zach, how you feeling?
Feel good. Decent for week zero was generous, to say the least. But I feel good. I mean, there's a lot of excitement in the state, obviously, with volleyball night tomorrow night being Wednesday. Just a really good energy as if there is a home game this weekend. Unfortunately, there is not. So it's kind of uncharted territory to start on a Thursday, but it feels really good just to be really in the mix of things. We got our depth chart. We're getting sort of kind of the regular press conferences with, your mid-season type of update. So it feels like we're right in the mix here, and it feels good to be back. So excitement's at an all-time high for now.
Yeah, you mentioned the kind of the week zero matchups with Notre Dame playing Navy over there in Dublin, the game Nebraska took part in last year, and that I'm sure a thriller for non-Husker fans. But, the slate kind of didn't it scratched the itch a little bit. But, Notre Dame ended up blowing out Navy. I watched most of the USC-San Jose State game, which got me off to a good start betting-wise. Was able to win my first bet of the season. So that's always a good way to start out the season. So what did you kind of think of the games this last weekend?
Yeah, I mean, it was fairly underwhelming, but you kind of expect that. You appreciate the fact that you have, real live college football back. The Notre Dame Navy, just the way it started, just the scenery, everything with player entrances and, everything that comes along with, kicking off a season, it was pretty cool. And then it suddenly was not so cool for Navy. So to your betting point, I did take Navy +20.5. And that was just done, in the first quarter. So I will say Sam Hartman is a kid that, I think you and I have both followed for a while now. And it's been exactly that, a while, being in a sixth year in college football. But the guy's a complete stud. Notre Dame's got four very capable, strong, powerful running backs. So yep. I think they really came out impressive. I didn't think USC did come out impressive. Right. Their defense is going to have a very long year. But Caleb Williams, was
as advertised.
He continues to be that dude. The one thing you mentioned, you got to see USC play. For whatever reason, I don't have Pac-12 Network. So that was kind of a gut punch to end the night. But one regret I will say I had was not watching Louisiana Tech a little bit closer, just because they are on our schedule.
Right.
It just didn't really click internally for me that we do play them down the road. So I wish I would have paid a little more attention to that.
Yeah, I didn't think about it either until somebody had mentioned it. I've listened to the radio shows Monday, and they're like, "And Ross," I was like, "Oh yeah, we do play them." Yep.
Yeah, but that the UTEP, catching lightning in a bottle that one year with the meep, they kind of didn't show up at all. Jacksonville State did get their first Division I victory, so that's always cool to see. And Logan Smothers, we even got a little Logan Smothers action on week zero. So a little bit of everything, but not enough of what we love most about college football. But all in all, happy to have it back.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, the games weren't as competitive or as interesting as you liked. And, back to your point about the USC game, you being unable to locate it. Yeah, luckily Cox here in Omaha does provide the Pac-12 network. But, you go back to all this conference realignment things and, you look at things like that. You've got the reigning Heisman Trophy winner, the Heisman favorite to go back-to-back, and his first game of the season where there's nothing on television is nowhere to be found on cable. And Pac-12, you can look yourself right in the mirror. And if you wonder why the teams have bailed and this conference is no longer existent after this year, There you go, right there. Heisman Trophy winner, week zero, not on television. I mean, there it is right there. So, yeah, I was interested in the Notre Dame game. Obviously, I know a lot of people were on the Navy, plus 20 and a half. But, you know, I was kind of anxious to see what Sam Hartman looked like, you know, obviously being a grown-ass man, 24 years old, 6 years. I believe he's the ACC's all-time leading passer. So I was kind of wanting to see what Notre Dame looked like with a, you know, a big-time legit quarterback. And, you know, they did what they're supposed to. You know, there's old boxing, you know, term, you know, you don't play with your food, you know, get them up out of there early. And so, you know, they didn't waste no time and mess around with them. You know, they ran up the score on them pretty quickly. So it was just kind of interesting to see. You know, I traveled out to Ireland last year for that game for Nebraska Northwestern. So I was just kind of anxious to see it on television, and it just kind of brought back all those feelings and memories from last year. You know, the Guinness drinking and the POS systems going down. So it's just free beer for all of us Husker fans. Like I said, I was drinking about 20 Guinnesses and 30 Jameson and Gingers a day out there. So it was a great time all the way up until, I believe, the second half onside kick. And then that's when I started not having a good time. Made for a very long plane ride back. I'll tell you that. It's like, but no, just that was, it's a great game. It's a beautiful stadium. And anybody gets a chance to go out there and see it, if your team plays out there, I would highly recommend it. It was a great experience. So no complaints outside of, you know, Scott Frost being the coach. So, yeah, week zero is in the books. So nothing really shocking happened. Just kind of, you know, some blah games. Week one offers a little bit more, especially that Sunday night game with Florida State and LSU, which, you know, I was kind of trying to put together my preseason, you know, picks for the college football playoff. And I think both of those teams are right in the thick of things. So, you know, we're here. Nebraska kicks off, you know, kind of the official first night of college football. There's another big time matchup Thursday night with Utah and Florida playing. That should be a great game. But, you know, up back to our opening statements, you kind of talked about, you know, it's a big week here in Nebraska. And, you know, unfortunately or fortunately, however you want to look at it, the biggest event going on is Volleyball Day in Nebraska. A really special event. If you were on ESPN today, it was the headlining picture on their webpage of the 90 plus thousand expected to be at Volleyball Day in Nebraska. And you're seeing pictures released of it. It just looks like an awesome scene. Zach, I know you're not traveling, you live there. You're going over to the game. So what are your kind of thoughts on it? Are you just kind of excited to see it? And have you been to a Nebraska volleyball game before?
It was a long time ago. And yeah, sometimes when you do go across town in Lincoln, it feels like a traveling trip. So,
yeah,
but we're going to be going to it. And yeah, I mean, this is just an awesome event. I mean, this is a really big deal. You know, it's potentially going to break the world record for a women's sporting event. And it breaks the record for the U.S. women's national team playing at the Rose Bowl. Yep. So it's really just a cool scene, not only just for, you know, sports in Nebraska, for the university, I mean, for women's sports all over the place. The general perception for Nebraska and just their fandom. And so it's really cool to see. There's been a ton of work put in.
Yeah. You kind of listen to Trev Alberts talking about all the planning and stuff, and it looks, you know, miraculously, it looks like Mother Nature is going to work with us tomorrow. So I think
I stopped talking there because something started playing on my computer, but back to what I was saying. Sorry. I had ESPN up and it just started playing, but no, it's just a really cool event. Just a couple of tidbits that I heard throughout just the media outlets today is, like 100 Nebraska volleyball alumni are coming back for the game. Unfortunately, Jordan Larson is not one of those because she's just still balling and doing her thing, internationally. But like, I think I saw 40, you know, buses from around the area or statewide with full volleyball teams are coming in to be able to see this. And the cool thing about that is, you know, the Bob Devaney Sports Center, it sells out, and it's so hard to get those big groups of people to come to these games. And so for them to open up this type of option and opportunity for not only the, you know, the program, the Nebraska volleyball program, but just for the whole state to come in and just like kind of celebrate the kickoff of the fall sports year, whether it be, you know, you know, the volleyball program or just, you know, everything kicking off. And I think it's really cool that they're doing a tunnel walk for the team.
Yeah, there's supposed to be something really special about the entrance tomorrow. I've been hearing a lot of murmurs, and I'm assuming it's kind of a tunnel walk thing, but it sounds like it might be a little bit more than that. Just kind of what I've been hearing a lot of the press allude to, I guess.
Yep. And so this just speaks to the quality of this program and, you know, what it can be when there's a little success sprinkled in there. And I don't mean a little. Right. I mean, there's been a lot of success over the years with this volleyball program, but you look at the football program too. It's like you start stacking these wins, start doing things like this, and you're going to have crazy cool events that bring in just a wide array of different fans and different opportunities for people to come see. So,
yep.
Football, take notes.
Yeah, exactly. It, you know, the beautiful thing about this is it started out of, you know, kind of a rivalry type thing. So, you know, going into last year, Nebraska held basically the top five highest, not population games, but highest crowds in volleyball history. And then Wisconsin, which would be our main rival here in conference, we just lost the natty to them in 2021. They took their game over to the basketball arena to kind of add some more seats in, because one, not too many college volleyball teams play in big arenas like the Vanny. So Wisconsin had moved their game over to the basketball arena and was able to etch out a little bit to record-breaking performance there. So Nebraska was like, okay, so you got a couple more fans. All right, let's see what we can do. About 95,000 for you. So, yeah. And so it's going to break, obviously, the volleyball record and then the largest women's attendance ever, which was obviously held by the 99 women's national soccer team there at the Rose Bowl when they won the World Cup, the famous, you know, PK and rip shirt off and celebrate. So, yeah. And, you know, shout out to the Nebraska fans, honestly. It's like, you know, if you build it, they will come. If you win, they will come. And in Nebraska football's case, even if you don't win, they will still come. You know, they will still come. So,
and if they don't, we'll buy it.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Do you remember those days? I mean, we were in college. Well, you were playing college football at the time, so you probably don't even know that. So when we're in college, they would have the games on like pay-per-view. So you'd have to pay, you know, $29.99 a game to watch, you know, like Nebraska versus, you know, Arkansas State or whoever. It's like, yeah, those days seem like so long ago. Now it's, you know, but I think, you know, next year we're going to start getting into streaming games. Like there's going to be a couple games on Peacock. You know, it's been nice having all of our games televised on either Big Ten or Big Fox or Fox Sports One. So it's going to be a little weird and definitely going to be having to do some explaining to my dad and, you know, uncles and elders about like, okay, so it's on this app and you got to, you know, it's going to be a lot of that. So that probably also, you know, 80% of Nebraska fans are going to have to be explained to what Peacock is and where to find that and how to do that. So, but we'll deal with that another time. So back to the, you know, the lecture at hand here, Nebraska going to Minnesota, 7.5-point dogs Thursday night. Tanner Morgan's finally out of there. So, you know, the Matt Rhule era officially is here, and, you know, it wouldn't be a officially game week without, you know, it's been the quietest off season, around. And unfortunately today was the first speed bump, a road bump, in the Matt Rhule area, Matt Rhule era about, you know, you texted me this morning about, the unfortunate events with Eric Gilbert being arrested this morning or late last night, however you want to look at it. For a little B&E, a little breaking and entering at a liquor vape shop right there on O Street. You know, I mean, a genius idea to, you know, break through a window on 26th and O Street, you know, not a very, you know, private area at all. So I guess what, you know, I think we both kind of had different thoughts about it. You brought up, you know, a pretty good point about, you know, maybe with the NCAA kind of dragging them along and, you know, kind of, you know, when you take football away from some of these kids, that's all they have. And they kind of, you know, maybe fall back on some bad habits. You know, that probably plays a, you know, a factor in it. But at the end of the day, we're, you know, he's a grown up, you know, and unfortunately this will be his third school in 3 years. And so maybe it's something deeper than that, or, you know, there's another way to look at it of, you know, when you see a lot of these big time schools and when Nebraska was winning, you know, the arrests were racking up. So maybe this is a step in the the winning direction. I guess what kind of what were your thoughts on the situation and Eric Gilbert in general?
Yeah, I mean it's a tough subject to discuss just because you don't know what the kid's going through. You don't know anything. You know what's going, you know, between his ears, and you know, I feel bad for him, but you know, I won't dance around the fact that it was a bonehead move. I mean, it's a time and place where he shouldn't have been a part of it. You know, he should be, you know, where he should be, and which is in dorms and, you know, just minding his own business. But
right.
I feel like, you know, like you said, and like I had told you, it's kind of a product. He's kind of a product of a failed system. And this, you know, this whole NCAA and, you know, the fact that there's so much gray area in all their ruling around transfers and eligibility and everything that goes along with that. It's frustrating, you know, for everyone involved. And I know not only just him, his family, the coaching staff, but it's tough to see a kid that, you know, maybe doesn't have or feel like he has a place. Right. Because he's waiting and there's all this uncertainty whether he's going to be able to play this year or not. The rest of his brothers and teammates are, you know, practicing and preparing for this game, and he's kind of on the outside looking in. And so you can see where maybe he got caught up and got caught up in a bad situation where, you know, the situation may have got the best of him. And so I feel for him. I you know, you hate to see that happen to anybody. But hopefully that he gets the help he needs and he can get right back on the straight arrow. But I feel like even, you know, some of the coaches that did speak out today, they alluded to that a little bit, but they also walked that fine line of not really throwing shade at the NCAA because that's never right. What you want to do. But it also, I know a little bit of this whole process is handled by his former university. And so that's been the case for other transfers where his former university is holding things up on their end. And so it's like, you know, if the kid wants to leave and he's already here, what's Georgia doing?
Yeah.
So I don't know. Yeah. I just, that frustrates me. I wish him the best and I hope that, you know, maybe we can retain him and get him on more of a straightened path, but we'll see.
Yeah. You know, exactly. You wish the kid the best. And you know, maybe if we can, you know, if he needs to sit out the season and just get his head right and, you know, be in the program, you never know, but you wish him the best. But, you know, let's talk about the kids that are here and are going to play. You know, that's what we do here. So the two deep was released late last week. Not a lot of surprises on the depth chart release. What kind of jumped out to you? I guess kind of offensively, I guess I'll go was the Alex Bullock, the Creighton Prep graduate, being listed as the number one wide receiver. What else kind of jumped out to you on the depth chart release?
Yeah, I think the Alex Bullock is maybe just a Band-Aid because Marcus Washington's been hurt all camp. IGC, you know, I think he's going to be fine as the other wide receiver there. Slot, I mean, I think slot and tight end is where we're going to be making our money in the passing game this year. We have Billy Kemp and Joshua Fleeks, who are both very, very experienced, tenured college football players. Joshua Fleeks obviously has that special relationship with Rule, so I think that helps him not only, you know, perform well, but also receive that coaching from Rule, who he's been familiar with for a long time. And then, let's see, Teddy Prochazka. I mean, obviously he's way buried down there, but he's also on there. So I think that's a good sign. And then, I mean, the fact that Anthony Grant's third is kind of a surprising deal, but I also am a little bit encouraged by it because Anthony Grant was suspended early in fall camp or spring ball. So I think that might be just more of a teaching point there. But Gabe Irvin's solidifying himself as the number one running back is huge, I think, because once you can separate yourself as the guy, and then we've already clearly located Ramir Johnson as the third down back, everyone's got their place. And I think that's important to set expectations. So I think offensively, not a ton of surprises outside of that wide receiver spot.
I like that I saw two freshmen there on the two deep linemen. You know, Gunnar Katula, obviously our boy, Lincoln Southeast grad, and then Sam Sledge from Creighton Prep. And, you know, everything you're hearing out of camp is that, you know, Sam Sledge is a Sunday guy. So I think we're going to be seeing both of those guys this year. So that's exciting. I think both of those guys got a lot of potential. They're a little light in the ass right now. They're both about 285. So, you know, get them in that weight room a little bit more. But the fact that they've already cracked the two deep for week one, their true freshman year, is obviously bodes well. Defensive side of the ball, you know, Cam Linhart, you know, picked as a freshman preseason, first team freshman All-American. That's pretty big. And then, you know, the kind of guy you've been hearing a lot of talk about coming out of camp was this Chief Borders, a guy from Georgia, not Georgia University, just from Georgia, coming in at, you know, at outside linebacker, is supposed to be making a lot of noise. So there's some guys that we haven't seen before on the field that, you know, I'm kind of excited to see what they're all about. Especially Linhart. What else on the defense side? I know we've got a couple safeties that been in the program for a little bit or now can be getting some time. What would you see on that defense side of the ball?
Yeah, I'm excited, and I don't think he's been getting talked about enough, is that Malcolm Hartzog. He made a lot of plays last year. He's going to be one of our, you know, him and Quentin Newsom on the corners. I mean, that's solid, I think.
Yeah, I do too.
And then Blaze Gunnarsson, I think he's going to be, you know, I hate to steal your thunder here, but he's
first team all bus guy. First team all bus guy.
Yeah, and just the jack position here with Chief Borders, like you mentioned, MJ Sherman or Jamari Butler. I mean, Jamari Butler, he's only a sophomore, and it seems like he's been in the program for 4 years.
Correct.
And so I just think that position itself is really, really stacked. Just because it's,
and you know, in this 3-3-5 defense, you know, that position is the number one position, and you know, also you can fill in other spots with that. You know, this 3-3-5 defense is a lot of guys that are like that, guys that can, you know, rush the passer, go into coverage. I mean, so the more guys you have like that, the more it is going to be conducive to this type of defense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the jack and the rover, I think, are two positions where we need to have the most, like, elusive, not elusive, but, yeah, I guess elusive, type of players, type of bodies that can play in several different, like, looks and make plays in different ways. So I really like what we have there because, you know, our starting rover is Isaac Gifford also.
Yep. Another night.
So I feel really good about that. And just, you know, our D-line just looks, I feel like they're going to be really good.
You know, we need the polar bear to take that next step. You know, he came in with a lot of high praise, obviously as an undefeated heavyweight national championship wrestler, which, I mean, that's the kind of skill set you want for your defensive tackle. Obviously, especially in three down set, you want that nose guard just to be eating up blocks and tearing shit up, causing disruption. And especially, you know, you think the wrestling should be able to translate to using your hands and getting people, you know, shedding blocks. So we need the polar bear to take that next step. So, and I think he will. I think he's played well in the spots he's played. He hasn't been a full-time starter as of yet. And I mean, he's got some high expectations when there's a 320-pound defensive nose tackle coming into the game at number zero. I mean, the expectations are sky high. So, you know, those single digit defensive linemen, like, there's a lot of pressure to go along with it. So, especially number zero as a 320-pound nose tackle. So I'm anxious to see how he does this year. And on the back end, obviously we like the quarters. I think Hartzog is going to be an all conference performer and only going to be getting better. And then Newsom, obviously, has been steady Eddie. You know, if we can get him to take that next step from being good to great, you know, we're going to be in business. Then we've got two guys in the back and they've been in the program for 2 years now, the Omar Brown and Deshaun Singleton. I don't know a lot about these guys, but, you know, I'll say this. They look the part. You know, can they play the part? They've been special teams guys last year. Omar Brown was a first team FCS All-American at Northern Iowa before he transferred in. So, you know, a lot of high praise coming from that secondary, though. So I think, you know, the DBs and the linebackers, I think, are going to be probably the strong suit on our team. And then the defensive line, obviously, you know, Blaze Gunnarsson's been my, you know, my pick to click, you know, for the last 3 years since he came in from Carroll, I believe Carroll, Iowa. So he looks the part. Like I said, he's first team all bus. And for those that don't know what that means, that means, you know, the guy that when you're getting off the bus, you want him to be the first guy to walk out because, you know, the other team is like, oh, shit, who's this big motherfucker? So yeah. If you haven't seen the picture, go, you know, I think he's 6'5", 275. So just exactly how you want to draw it up, especially for your DN in this 3-3-5 defense. So yeah, I'm excited to see these guys play.
And then Omar Brown, I mean, he's a senior guy and he's from Minneapolis, Minnesota. You think he's not going to come out with his hair on fire on Thursday?
He's going to be trying to come out and do some head busting.
Yep, exactly. So I love that. And I'm looking for him to make some plays. And then Deshaun Singleton, like you said, I mean, he's a Louisiana guy. So, you know, he's got that talent in him.
Got that dirty South in him.
Well, yeah. So. We saw it from Trey Palmer last year. So,
yeah. What do you feel is our strongest position group, you know, offense or defense, which position group do you like the best?
So, I think offensively, I think running backs is where we're deepest. You know, I mentioned two of the guys, and then you still have our starting running back who almost hit 1,000 yards last year, Anthony Grant. And then you have this young buck, Emmett Johnson, who is getting a lot of praise. He's going to be one of our kick returners.
Yeah, he's going to be a starting kick returner.
Yeah, him and Ramir are going to be returning kicks. So, I mean, you know, just any way that you can involve those guys who are more than likely some of your best athletes on the team. And I think that's one thing that this coaching staff has really taken on is getting your best players on special teams, because if you don't learn from the past, you're not going to move forward in the future. So
correct.
I think that's good. Defensively, I've already spoken about them, but the defensive line, I think they are just going to be, you know, with it being a 3-3-5, you know, they're going to have to make noise with the little numbers that they have, as opposed to, you know, obviously being a four-man front. But, you know, on some of the other media outlets that I've been listening to, there's been guys that have just spoken just praises for this defensive line. And they've been saying, like, hey, you know, this is going to be a really impressive unit. This is going to be something that, you know, you're going to be really, really proud of to be a Husker fan. So I'm really looking forward to them to come in and make noise, because I think this is Ty Robinson's year to really break out. Yep. Coming in as such a highly recruited athlete, and the size and the strength and the leadership that he has within this locker room and program, really looking for him to really lead the way there.
Yeah, I'm with you on the offensive side. I think the running back room, obviously, we feel really good about that. Got a variety of different guys in there. You got young guys, you got versatile guys, you got experience. So definitely the running back room. And I think that's conducive to what, you know, Matt Rhule wants to be as a football team. You know, he talks about physicality, physicality, physicality. Every press conference you hear him speak in, he's talking about being physical. And, you know, I think I hesitate to even say this because they've been the absolute worst part of the team, an absolute joke. Mainly the reason I don't buy that pipeline fucking beef jerky is because these guys have been absolutely dog shit. But the offensive line, they have everybody returning. They went and got a proven starter for your center, your most important position. And now you've sprinkled in some up-and-coming freshmen as backups. So, and now you're going to have a team, a coach that wants to be a run-the-ball physical team. So that helps the offensive lineman. Instead of, you know, getting back in pass pro, it's just going straight ahead. So, you know, I'm hoping the offensive line could be a strong suit. You know, you've got a bunch of guys that have played a lot of football for us up front. So, and then you bring in another guy that has started 4 years at another Power Five school, and Ben Scott, our center. So I'm hopeful and I'm hoping and praying that the offensive line could be a strong suit. Defense wise, I like the DBs. I think they're deep, a lot of athleticism back there. So, which is crazy. You know, we lost one of our best DBs, our second leading tackler, you know, to the portal and being suspended and all that. So, so that's, you know, the position groups. Obviously, I think we probably feel wide receivers probably our weakest group, you know, so that could be proven different. I'm anxious to see what this Billy Kemp guy does. But, you know, that, the title of this episode is called Bowl or Bust. And I think the team, even if you hear Matt Rhule, you kind of get the vibe that he's not thinking this is a 10 win team. Like he thinks this is we're gonna have to scratch and claw to get to 6-7 wins. And so it's bowl or bust. And that's kind of the vibe you get from the fans and just kind of the vibe around the state of where this team's at and what we're looking for. It's been 6 years since we've been to a bowl game, since we went to Nashville and got beat by Tennessee in the Music City Bowl behind the stellar quarterback play of Riker Fife. So, I guess it leads me into the question of, why will Nebraska make a bowl this year and why won't Nebraska make a bowl? So, Zach, you want to just start of why will Nebraska make a bowl game this year?
Oh, yeah. Love to. So first off and foremost, we lifted the curse by bringing Frank Solich back for the spring game.
Curse is broken now. Huh?
Curse is broken. We are good to go. But no, all jokes aside, no. I think we're going to play more disciplined football, really just by doing a better job at taking care of the ball, not straying away from our identity, and really knowing and understanding assignments and expectations and not having that divided locker room that we all of a sudden had last year, maybe a little bit the year before. And then, like you said, physicality, it's coming from the top. You mentioned that Rhule always speaks to physicality. And today, even he said to the media, they're not going to fair catch kickoffs.
I heard that.
Yeah.
I was caught off guard.
Yeah. He goes, that's not my style. That's not how football should be played. We're not going to be a bunch of pussies anymore.
We're here to play football.
And you know what's odd to me is we hit. We went full bore, full contact. Quarterbacks didn't have green jerseys on. We hit all of fall camp, and it seems like this is the fewest injuries we've seen coming out of camp. So iron sharpens iron. I think that there's no coincidence there. And, I mean, I think it's going to be really, really identity driven. I think it's going to be that Rhule knows what he wants to do, and he's not going to panic when it matters most, like Frost did, and like his assistants did, because there's something being ingrained into their skulls that we are going to be a tough football team. We're going to do what we do, and we're not going to stray away. He goes, if we get down 10, 17, nothing, I'm not worried about that. It's not about how you start. It's about how you finish. Yep. We don't want to start. We don't always want to start fast. We don't want to worry about that. You don't see a finish line and then slow down. You keep going, you keep going, you keep going. And so just the things that he has ingrained into all of his players, mentals is going to show. Maybe it's not the first game, but it's going to be damn well by game six.
Yeah. And so for me, the reason if Nebraska is to make a bowl game, it's going to be because we win one possession football games. The last guy that was coaching here, had a hefty 5-27 record in close games. And not to say that Rhule's going to come in here and we're going to win every one possession game, but it's sure the hell going to be better than 5-27. So, I mean, when you lose that many one possession games, if you have one or two of those, turn the other way in a season, it totally changes the whole season. Last year, Nebraska is up 10-0 on Minnesota and end up getting beat. We've lost to Minnesota the last three times have been by one possession. So if Nebraska is to make a bowl game this year, it's going to be because we actually have able to finish games and have a better one possession win record. Win-loss record. And, it starts, especially, I think the kind of team we're going to have is going to be a kind of muck-it-up team. We're going to be in a lot of 17-21, 24-type games. Nebraska is not going to crack 40 points this season. I'm going to tell you that maybe against one of the FCF's teams we play, but Nebraska's not cracking 40 points this season. So
maybe when USC joins the conference next year.
Yeah. So it's going to be a lot of close, low scoring games. So I think Nebraska to make a bowl game this year, we need to get that curse out of here of that one possession win loss record. And I think Matt Rhule, and like you alluded to about his presser today, he says, I'm not in starting fast. I'm in about finishing the fourth quarter. That's where the money's made. He brought up how Nebraska was up 10. And I loved how he said we, when he was talking about last year's team. He said, we were up 10-0 last year on Minnesota, ended up losing the game. So, first of all, I absolutely love that he said we, and he wasn't even a part of it last year. So, he knows what the bugaboos have been. He's telling you right there. So, we're not here to start fast. We're here to finish the game in the fourth quarter. And that will be the reason why Nebraska will make a bowl game.
Yep.
Now, the opposite side of that, Zach, if Nebraska is not to make a bowl game, why would that be?
So, you know, the first one, and it's not really, I mean, it's just something we've all heard of, but history can repeat itself, not only for Nebraska, but Rule's lack of success in his first year at college programs, it hasn't been great. So I think that that hangs over us a little bit, but that's just kind of more of like a feel. I think injury bug might bite us, and we'll be left with position groups that are either inexperienced or young and undisciplined, because we do have a young team outside of, you know, our core, you know, black shirts or you know, 30 guys that are still, you know, upperclassmen. Comes back to the passing game. I think a lack of weapons in the passing game could make us a little bit too one-dimensional. Right. And again, cause injuries or mistakes from the running backs, and then eventually just put Sims in a spot where he could have too much on his shoulders, which leads to mistakes.
Turn into Adrian Martinez.
Exactly. Yep. and then I think, you know, it's the kicking game too. You know, this is something that's also hanging over our head. It took too long for them to name the starting place kicker in comparison to other positional starters. Right. If you got two, you ain't got one. But I do know that we did get one of the best kickers in all of the country. He was named the starter today.
That motherfucker's cold-blooded. Sorry to cut you off. I saw this guy last year walking on that fucking state championship field, fucking game on the line,
with 8,000 people in the stands.
And stepped on the field and fucking banged home what was like a 45-yarder in Memorial Stadium.
And he's been missing them in practice too.
Yeah. Until I see him miss them, fucking I'm taking our kicking game as a strong suit, I guess.
This is not a fun topic because we're talking about why we won't make a bowl. I'm just putting it out there from what I've seen. And yeah. And so I think we're in a good spot with him, but we've also had a 5-star kicker from Hoover, Alabama.
Yep. Yep.
Barrett Pickering.
Hey, motherfucker was first team all conference one season.
Yeah.
Right. His freshest, and then it was downhill from there. But
so, I mean, I think aside from that too, some of the growing pains of new staff and, you know, just developing and maintaining a true team identity, whether that's the offense or defense, or just learning how to win again. And like you said, you know, we need to be able to win in those, you know, final minutes of a game. And in the great words of Jonathan Moxon from Varsity Blues, we need somebody to step up and be like, let's be heroes.
Yeah. So for me, tacking on to that, you know, if Nebraska is not to make a bowl game this year, I think the main reason that we're going to see is the lack of playmakers, the lack of dudes. You know, we don't have Trey Palmer this year, and shit, we might not win one game last year if Trey Palmer's not on the team. I mean, that guy opened up a lot of games and opened up a lot of stuff for us to be able to do by just being able to take that top off the defense. We don't have any game breakers on offense or defense. You know, defense wise, we don't have, you know, Garrett Nelson coming off the edge. We don't have a proven pass rusher. Now, somebody could step up and be that guy, but there's nobody on the team right now where it's like, I know this guy is a dude. We got a lot of guys that we think can be dudes. We don't have any guys that is a proven dude. So if Nebraska's to not make a bowl game this year, it's going to be because of the lack of playmakers on both sides of the ball. So, I mean, you know, it's kind of, you know, we're kind of be trying to play like a Iowa Wisconsin type game, but you know, I don't know if we have that whole system built in yet. You know, Iowa wants to, you know, fucking dry hump you to death and win the game. That's probably who we want to beat. You know,
no, that's Northwestern.
Yeah. So you say, yeah.
Too soon. Sorry.
Yeah. Yeah. So the lack of playmakers or proven playmakers, at least. You know, someone can come out and, you know, be different. We talked about the Bullock starting wide receiver, you know. Maybe on the high end, you know, he's, you know, maybe Brandon Riley on the low end. Maybe he's Wyatt Lever, you know. No, fucking. So
I always swore that name off of this podcast.
Yeah. So, yeah, lack of proven playmakers could be the detriment to this team. But, you know, you never know. It's
as a response to that, though. We didn't know what we had in Trey Palmer going into last year either.
We knew he was a burner.
We had Toure before that year.
Ettore was a guy too.
He was. And so maybe we got the next guy stepping up and being that third piece. Who knows?
Maybe Bullock's, you know, the great white hope, you know.
I mean, maybe Fleeks.
Hey, I'm excited to see Billy Kemp play. I just got an odd feeling that this guy is a dog and this guy is going to be a player for us.
I mean, Rule said he'd go into an alley and get in a fight with him.
Exactly.
Or not with him.
Anytime somebody is mentioned in that light of, I'd take this guy in an alley, sign me the fuck up for him. You know, like, sign me up for anybody that has ever been referenced of, if I was in an alley, I'd want this guy with me. Sign me up for that guy.
I'm sure Coach Prime would agree with that, too.
Yeah. So, it's, I guess, overall on the team, which kind of, you know, we talked about, obviously, Kemp. What other guy are you anxious to see play and see what, you know, what he actually is? Maybe a guy that hasn't as new to the team or hasn't played. Any guy is standing out to you where you're like, I'm ready to see this guy play and see what he can do.
So I think offensively, it's not necessarily guys that haven't played, but I feel like it's guys that haven't been utilized in the correct way. Offensively, mm-hmm. for sure, it's that thunder and lightning. It's going to be Ramir and Gabe Irvin. He's played, 58 snaps or 58 carries he's gotten. And I feel like, and it's been well documented, 50 of those plays have just been gone to shit.
Yep.
Ramir has been moved around so much that finally I feel like he's in the right spot as a third down back where he can come out of the backfield, catch passes. He can, you know, do some different things and be that elusive back that you need. Defensively, I put Ty Robinson / Chief Borders because I think Chief Borders is going to be playing behind Ty Robinson a lot. Ty Robinson is going to be one of those guys that clears space.
Yep.
It's up to Chief Borders to come into that space and make plays. Yep. So I think those two combined. And then obviously honorable mention, Jeff Sims, Thomas Fedoni.
Yeah, I was going to say, my guy was, obviously Blaze Gunnarsson has been my guy for, three or four years now. Billy Kemp, I'm ready to see this guy play. And then Fedoni, the former five-star tight end out of Council Bluffs, which is crazy because you look at the number one rated player in college football outside of Caleb Williams is Brock Bowers out of Georgia, the all-world tight end out of Georgia that's came and set the world on fire since his freshman year. It's been, one or two best players in the entire country since he stepped foot on campus. You know, Thomas Fedoni was rated ahead, was a spot ahead of him and coming out of high school. So, you want to see what this guy is. Speaking of guys that look the part, he looks the part, He's big, athletic. You hate seeing that big ass fucking knee brace on him, but. And
he hates it too.
I'm told that Rule made him wear it, is making him wear it. So, but you want to see a guy, there's nothing worse than seeing somebody not fulfill their potential. And it hasn't been on him. It's just been his body breaking down. So you're just like, one, you're just praying for him to have a injury-free season and get out and show what he can do. And maybe he isn't shit, but maybe he is Brock Bowers, him and Trent Borkcher, another guy from, as they say, A-Town, Aurora, Nebraska. I like both of those guys here. So anxious to see what the tight end room looks like because they're going to lean on them a lot. So the run game, offense line, tight ends, and underneath receivers. That's how this team is built. There's no take the top off the defense guy on the team this year. So I think we have the guys in place at least that can, function in that kind of offense. But it's like you said, you're playing with fire when you're basically going to try to nickel and dime everybody in a 17, 20, 21, 18 type game. So, it doesn't leave a lot of room for error. I don't know. I mean, 48 hours away from now, we're going to be finding out a lot about this team. And really, this team is, I really don't know how to, project this team without seeing them play this first game. Because you tell me Nebraska goes out, two nights from now and beats Minnesota. Well, I'm thinking now they're, an 8-win team. They go out there and get beat and don't look like shit. It's like, we're going to have to scratch and claw to get six. It's probably a 5, So it's, this game, and unfortunately, I've literally said this the last 3 years, this first game dictates the season. I said it last year, you know, fucking, and guess what? It did.
It has the last like 5 years.
Yeah. Like it has like people it's oh, the first game, whatever, you know, and I'm going to go back to the Ireland game. Go back to the Ireland game. I'm in the pub drinking with some local Irishmen and they're asking me, you know, is this an exhibition game? You know, is this game serious? You know what? Blah, blah, blah. I'm like, I go, hey man, I need this victory. Like I need my next breath. And this motherfucker, he sat down his Guinness and he said, sir, you have a lifetime Husker fan. Like, it was just like, did you just say you need this win? Like, you need your next breath? And I'm like, yeah. Like, this motherfucker is getting fired. This guy is making $5 million a year is losing his job. Like, this is serious fucking business. And people don't want to, like, oh, it's just the first game of the season. And it's like, it lays the groundwork for the season. And exactly. And you have guys still that have been on this team for years. And guess what? They're going to be like, oh, shit, here we go again. You know?
And to that point, that's Ramir.
Right.
Ramir's been through all of it.
Yep.
I mean, I'm sure there's been a lot, you know, several more outside of him, but yeah, Ramir's been through all of it. And the guy, they called him, what they call him? Like, oh gosh, I don't know. He is a guy that's just never been complaining. He's always kind of taken his role and then kept moving. And so, I really am looking forward to him. But one thing we didn't touch on real quick, going back, sorry, with the depth chart, is there was a couple positions on defense we haven't seen in a while. But there was one on offense we haven't seen in a while, and it's on there.
Ooh. Oh, the FB? What's the FB stand for, Zach?
Facebook?
Yeah, that's what I know. Shit.
Yeah,
fullback. But, it's back. Fullback. They had a fullback camp this year. Only fullbacks.
And going back to my comment about Frank Solich coming to the spring game.
Yep.
They did fullback trap, first play. So I think that's really cool. But
yep. So okay, so we've broken down the roster, kind of talked about what we're expecting to see this year. You know, outside of Nebraska football, which is obviously our diehard passion. I mean, college football in general is my passion. I love college football. I guess what are we kind of looking like on the national scene? We know Nebraska ain't competing for fucking shit, you know, conference championship, national championships. What are you kind of looking like on the national scene? It seems like it's kind of an open race. Obviously Georgia's been back-to-back champs coming to try to make a third in a row. They're preseason number one, but there's a lot of questions on that Georgia team. For me, I guess I think this is the year that Michigan breaks through. I think Michigan is the best team in the country. A lot of people forget that last year, you know, their running back was the number one Heisman going into two games left in the season. Gets hurt, Blake Corton. Yep. And they have the two top running backs in the country. He returns. I think if he is healthy last year, I think Michigan would have won it all last year. Got the returning stud quarterback back. I think this is the year that Michigan breaks through, wins the Natty, and next year we see Harbaugh coaching for the Raiders. Especially with these pending allegations, they want to fucking suspend him and all this weird shit that's been going on.
Him for the first like three or four games,
they did. He suspended himself.
Well, I mean, the university and him probably did.
But yeah, they're thinking he could get a hefty suspension next year.
It just opens up more time for him to have sleepovers with recruits.
He's doing something right.
Yeah,
he's doing something right. Because that team looks fucking awfully good, man. And now he's got a quarterback and he's got a hell of a team. So,
yeah.
And then, you know, obviously the talk of college football has been your boy. You know, for those that don't know, Ravy's a big time Deion Sanders guy. I see that these guys are coming out in icy whites, uniforms, and Gucci sunglasses for the whole team. What's your thoughts on, you know, when we all like a nice all-white uniform, but what's your thoughts on Deion in general, Colorado, and the fact that he's has his team coming out in Gucci's all Gucci sunglasses as 30-point dogs on the road?
So, I mean, okay, let's rewind here. Deion Sanders is my favorite athlete of all time. I don't know that I necessarily agree with everything he's done since he got to Colorado, and I don't think a lot of other people do. Yeah. Outside of the Kool-Aid drinkers in the state of Colorado.
I think they're pot smokers.
Well, okay, cool. Yeah, I mean, Kool-Aid goes
the chiefers. Well
with that, I think.
Yeah,
go ahead. But It's hard. I mean, because I know that he's going to bring in talent. I know that I just don't think he did it very well to come on the scene to a place like Colorado and just expect a complete turnaround like he did at Jackson State right away. And right. Just the messaging he put out. I mean, I know that that's all like kind of media manipulated a little bit to an extent. I know that I'm sure his messaging, because he's a very big like Christian, like, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Like,
he don't drink. He don't cuss.
No, he doesn't do anything. Like, I followed him my whole life. Like, I know that he's got like the values. I think he's doing that for all the clout, just to get the recruits in. But I think that eventually, if he sticks around for long enough, which I don't think he will, I think Colorado is just like a stepping stone for him to right. potentially get to the SEC, if that's what he can do. But I don't agree with a lot of what he's done, and yeah. I can't wait to beat them in Boulder, because yeah. I don't think they're going to be very good this year.
Yeah.
I
think, well, their over-under win total is 2.5 games.
Yeah, that went down.
They open up with TCU.
Yeah.
I mean, their first five games is about as hard as it can be. I mean,
oh, and I'm going to be watching that TCU Colorado game.
Oh, yeah. That's can't miss television. I mean, well, Fox has been jamming it down your fucking throat.
Yeah. So there's not a lot of other good 11 a.m. games on Saturday either.
No, there isn't. No, you know, there's not a lot of top end games Saturday.
I have three that I marked down for Saturday, and then
there's the North Carolina South Carolina game. I'm interested
good
in
one. West Virginia at Penn State will be a good one, because I think Penn State's going to be a real contender.
I think this is the year. I think
they Penn might come State, out of the East.
I think they beat Ohio State.
No, not Michigan. Not Michigan though.
Yeah,
and I think Ohio State, beat Ohio State. Ohio State at Indiana is interesting in week one, because Ohio State's got a new guy at quarterback, and he don't have the tools that the previous quarterbacks at Ohio State have had.
Correct.
And there's
but he also has the top two receivers in the country.
Yeah, that's true. And I looked on Athlon Sports or something, and they referenced like the top freshman receivers to look out for going into this year. Three of the top five were at Ohio State.
I mean, Brian Hartline, I'm not sure how this guy hasn't got a head coaching job yet. A guy, I mean, just recruits nothing but five-star receivers. I mean, look at the receivers they got in the league now. I mean, it's they got a lot of studs. And then now the Marv Harrison Jr., I mean, just think 2 years ago, they're saying this guy is the best wide receiver prospect in the last 20 years. 2 years ago, he's on the team. He's their sixth receiver. I mean, there's four first-round guys that went already, one last year. And so it's like they've been doing nothing but recruiting five-star receivers. So that's what they're going to do. And, they, you know, maybe Kyle McCord is the quarterback. He was actually Marvin Harrison Jr.'s quarterback in high school. You know, he's another high four-star guy. So,
but I think the fan base wanted the other quarterback to start because – he was more.
Well, you know how it is. They want the younger guy, you know?
Oh, yeah.
It's like, oh, no, I don't want the guy that's been here for 3 years, you know? I want the freshman that's with all the hype.
And poor Kyle McCord, if anything, like, goes a little bit south at any point.
Oh, yeah.
Because they're going to be calling for him. Because, you know, everyone's favorite position on a team.
Quarterback.
Yep, exactly. Back
quarterback, so.
So, long story short, though, Deion, I think he'll be fine eventually. I don't think he's going to be at Colorado very long. I think this is, like, a stepping stone for him. And I think it's also kind of a smart move on his part, because he doesn't have like the media attention. Maybe he does like on like a national scale, but in the Boulder area, they said it on the ticket here in Lincoln. They said that on average, there's about 40 media members at each press conference for like the post practice or any sort of presser with Matt Rhule. In comparison to like Stanford, who has two. And so Colorado is probably in the middle of that right now, just because of all the hype around it. But he kind of stayed out of like the big picture for now, just so he can kind of get his legs under him. But I don't know. I mean, if he sticks around, he could turn it into a monster. I just don't think he will.
Yeah. And so just, you know, piggybacking on the national, you know, talk, we've got two, three national powers that are kind of back in the top 10 with some high hopes this season. You've got Florida State, USC, and Texas all in the top 10 with a lot of high hopes. It's like, do we see any one of those three actually break through and, you know, punch a ticket to the playoff. I mean, football is a lot better, and SEC has dominated for the last 10 years because mainly those three schools, Florida State, USC, and Texas, haven't been who they're supposed to be. A lot of them with high hopes this season. Obviously, Texas gets a big actually, Texas and Florida State, they start right out of the gate. Florida State plays LSU, which I think who could win the SEC, and Texas plays Alabama week two. Do you see any of those three busting through and making the college football playoff?
Texas better sure damn do it this year, because yeah. I mean they're stepping into quite the challenge when they move to the SEC. Right. I think the most likely out of those three is probably Florida State this year, because
right. I think they got a good team.
Yeah, I think they do too. And they shouldn't ever have a bad team being in Florida State. And Clemson's sure going to take a step back, because you know they have the elite coach, they have the recent history, they have all the pieces in place. It's just a matter of getting back on track. And I think Florida State has been off track for so long that they're due to really like turn things around quicker, especially knowing kind of the unknown. Like ACC is really trying to scramble to keep their conference intact. And it's just surprising to me that Florida State wasn't a team that has moved to the SEC yet.
Yeah.
You haven't even heard anything about it.
I know. There's a little murmurs about, Florida State and Clemson. It's like, dude, Big Ten, like if you could go get those two teams right there, and I think Miami and North Carolina were thrown in there. It's like, that's who you need to be going to get, because you don't want to be left out of the footprint. You don't want to be you'd be left out of Texas and you'd be left out of Florida. And, those are the recruiting hotbeds along with, California, obviously Georgia. The state is producing talent, but you can't be left out of Florida and Texas. So, to go down there in the South and get those teams would be, would be ideal. So, I kind of wrote down who my four were for to make the CFP. I got Michigan, Bama, Florida State, and Oregon, with Bama and Michigan playing the Natty with Michigan winning it all is who I was kind of looking at. The Pac-12, for being in its last year and the demise of its happening, the Pac-12's got a lot of good teams. The Pac-12's got about 5-6 teams that are all pretty good. Washington is good. USC is obviously good. Oregon's good. People ain't talking about it. Oregon State's going to be fucking good this year, And then the team that's won it the last 2 years, Utah. They have their quarterback back. So Utah's coming out of the gate right away playing Florida. So it's for the Pac-12 going away next year, they've got a lot of top 10 teams and a lot of top quarterbacks in the country this year. So I'll be anxious to watch, some Pac-12 after dark and see all those teams and see how it shakes out. But, Oregon's got Bo Nix back there, the Auburn transfer. So the Pac-12 is going to be very interesting. And so are a lot of the conferences. I think the SEC is wide open. I think LSU, Bama, Georgia, you want to see what Tennessee is going to do this year. So, I don't know. I guess what are you kind of looking at national scene? You kind of have a favorite, you think, for the title or any teams that you think are just cut above?
Well, I think what's going to be interesting is on Sunday. There are two games on Sunday, and Oregon State plays San Jose State.
Okay.
Which USC played San Jose State. So we're going to be able to get a little bit of a gauge of where maybe Oregon State or USC is. San Jose State, I know, has a pretty decent quarterback. He's a Hawaii kid. So he carved him up more than he probably should have. So I thought that was interesting. But I'm interested to see, obviously Georgia, they're kind of being lifted up as better teams for a while. When you're lifted up like that, you can only go down. And so I'm curious to see what that looks like. I think Michigan's going to be really good. I agree with you there. Ohio State, just naming a quarterback and having a little bit of controversy there, I think they might take a step back. Alabama also hasn't named a starting quarterback yet.
No.
And what I thought was interesting recently was Nick Saban said, I don't want to put out a depth chart yet because it creates like confusion or something. It's like confusion.
You're confusing me with that statement.
Did you miss misspeak and mean competition, because that's what happens when you release a depth chart and somebody who wants to be first string is second string. That's going to give them a little kick in the ass. So I don't know what that comment was all about, but I don't think USC is going to be there at the end. I think there's
they didn't look very good.
They didn't. Their defense didn't anyway. But Washington, you mentioned them. Michael Penix, he's been around forever, but he's been really, really good. Oregon's got the Bo Nix. He's got the big billboard like Joey Harrington.
Yeah, did you know, I was in New York City when that billboard was there. It was my first time ever in New York City. I didn't know nothing about Oregon Ducks football, and I definitely didn't know anything about Joey Harrington. I was like, who the fuck is this guy? But yeah, they redid that, which is awesome. Yeah. And I'm hoping it looks like they're going to bring back those uniforms that, were in the picture or whatever. When the Oregon started going to the, you know, the cool all uniforms. These crazy alternate uniforms. So, the Pac-12 is going to be interesting. So,
and I hate to say it, but I mean, the way that I saw a four-headed running back at Notre Dame, they might be okay this year. Yeah. I like that quarterback they have. I think their defense looked really good, especially going into a game where it's Navy. I get it. But there was a lot of speculation around how different their offense was going to look because they had that new coach come in after what's his name? I can't pronounce it. Left for after so long. But they just came down and just completely shut him down. So I think Notre Dame might be there at the end. But I think it's going to be our usual suspects at the end, like Georgia, Michigan, LSU. I think they're always going to be tough. I just don't want to put Ohio State in there this year.
I that's what I said. I like Penn State. I think this is the best Penn State team has best team Penn State's had in years. So and James I like them a little bit more. Yes, and you know, it'd be great to see them, you know, break through, and you know, maybe we can get two big team. 10 teams in or whatever, but yeah, I'm looking for Ohio State to take a step back, and you know, I think Penn State's you know, we're going to get to see them against a pretty decent West Virginia team, you know, first day, so I'm interested to see how they play out, but I think Penn State's got a great team. So well, Zach, it's, you know, it's here, it's game week, so end of the episode, it's time to make our our game predictions and our season predictions. What do you see happening Thursday night in Minneapolis? And what do you see the 2023 Nebraska Cornhusker season looking like under the first year under Matt Rhule?
Do you want me to give you both of them right up?
Yep, right go away? And spit them.
All right, well.
Go ahead and spit them.
I think we finally break through, and I think we win the first game. I think it's going to be 31-21. We won't get to the 40, Taylor. Don't worry.
Yep.
But you alluded to this earlier, so my record prediction lies on this first game because it does mean more than everyone thinks. And so I think if we win on Thursday, we go 8-4. If we lose, we go 6-6. So either way, I think we're bowling. If we win, our losses are Michigan, at Illinois, or Purdue. At Michigan State and at Wisconsin. And then if we lose on Thursday, I think our losses are at Minnesota, Michigan, at Illinois or Purdue. Again, I think both of those games are 50-50, but we win one of them, lose one of them. At Michigan State, at Wisconsin, and fortunately, we end the year with a loss against Iowa.
So 8-4 on the high end, 6-6 on the low end. And
not even on the high or low end. It just really rides on the first game.
Yep. So you have us winning Thursday night in Minneapolis. So for me, I got Nebraska falling to Minnesota 27-17 Thursday night in Minneapolis. You know, Minnesota's it's a tough game to open up with. You know, they've had our number. They've beat us four times in a row. Say what you want to about Mr. Row Your Boat, but he usually has a pretty well-coached, disciplined team. They've got a lot of returning production and production coming in at wide receiver and tight end. They always have a good physical offensive line and team in general. Now, Tanner Morgan, the 40-year-old quarterback, is finally gone. But if you can recall last year, Nebraska knocked Tanner Morgan out in the first quarter while we're up 10-0. And the backup, who is now the starter, came in and fucking diced us up, which is the Nebraska special, you know. Let a backup quarterback come in and dice us up. So Unfortunately, I see us going to Minneapolis and taking an L. As far as season predictions, I think we're 6-16. And it's, and on the high end, it's if we win Thursday in Minneapolis, 7-5. If we don't win and we look bad, I could see us at 5-7. It's going to be a dogfight, guys. Like I said, you get ready to see some real Big Ten football. Some, like I said, we're not cracking 40 points, and most of our games are going to be under 30. So I'm just hoping that Matt Rhule can get us some W's in those one possession close games. And I know there's been the talk about Tristan Alvarado, having trouble kicking in practice. As far as I've seen, is what I know him as is a cold blooded killer. So I think with Matt Rhule preaching fourth quarter, and a clutch kicker who I'm going to tell he's clutch. The motherfucker ain't kicked a field goal in college, but he's clutch to me. I think that wins us a couple close games, and we scratch and claw our way to six wins. No blowouts on the season outside of Michigan, a team that we didn't discuss today that people are a lot overlooking, who I have winning the Big Ten West, is Illinois. Brett Bielema has always been one of my favorite coaches, and he is definitely the best coach in the Big Ten West. And he, you know what kind of style of football he plays, and he's got a lot of returning production, and they just put all four of their DBs in the league last year. So Illinois is a tough-nosed team. So I'm looking for them to play Michigan in the Big Ten championship in the last season of divisions. So I'm anxious to see what it looks like. Like I said, this is kind of the biggest unknown I've had for Nebraska going in. Like, I have no idea what to expect Nebraska to look like Thursday. But, it's bowl or bust. That's it. There's, you want to talk about what makes a good season, what makes a bad season. If our season ends on Black Friday, it is a bad season. If we play a game after that, it's a good season. I don't care, my old saying, by hook or by fucking crook, man. Fucking get to a bowl game. That's it. Because, with this conference realignment coming along, there is going to be no more Nebraska. I'm going to say it right now. Nebraska is not going to see another 10-win season in the next 10 years. Because what's going to happen is now you have Oregon, USC, Washington. Like, now a good season is 8-4. There's not going to be no more 13-0 teams. Like, your national championship champion is going to be a two-loss team. So for Nebraska to be a good, an 8-4 record is going to be a really superb record, and conference champions are going to be 2-3 lost teams, because, we're getting into the haves and have nots. So we got four top end teams coming into the conference next year. That doesn't make your schedule even easier. So, and then like, oh, Nebraska, you're the farthest west team in the Big Ten, so why don't you play these teams? So this season, and Matt Rhule's first season, it's going to dictate a lot of how the future of Nebraska goes. And you kind of heard Trev Alberts talk about it in the radio show about, we're getting into the have and have nots, and we're going to separate. And, Nebraska's got every ingredient you need to be on the inside of things, except for the winning. It's time to get that last piece and actually, step up and be a part of, the teams that are going to be, we're going to see some contraction, in my opinion, aka Rutgers. You might be getting your shit going, but I'm going on a little rant here. So, but it's a big season. If people talk about it too much and maybe not enough, or I don't know, culture. We need to see the team look different. Like I said, I mentioned hopefully no blowouts outside of maybe Michigan. Like, that's going to be a big step. And getting to a bowl game. Like, you see no blowouts in a bowl game, you're going to be feeling really good about this. And Rhule's already proven that he's a good recruiter. If he can recruit to this dog shit team, a 4-win team, what can he do if, we get a little momentum going? We can start getting some of those high 4-star, maybe a 5-star guy. So, we need to get on it, guys. It's not getting any easier. We got some big dogs coming to town, so they ain't coming here to fucking play patty cake with us. So what do they say? You need to shit or get off the pot. So it's time to step up. So that's what I'm looking at. I'm excited, man. I'm excited for Thursday night, and I'm excited for college football in general. Like I said, I think it's one of the more wide open seasons of college football we've had in some time. So, any other parting shots, Zach?
Yeah. To those who are football lovers, just go ahead and kiss your spouses, kiss your loved ones. We're getting into it. We'll see you in February.
Yep, exactly. See, after the Super Bowl, after my 49ers, you know, San Francisco, you know, because it's the sixth Super Bowl coming to town. So after my 49ers bring home that number six, you know, daddy and hubby would be checking back in. Till then, see you on the couch. So, as always, go Big Red. Look forward to talking to you guys after this game.
Sink the boat.
This is the Big Red Revival.